The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right. Welcome to a Wednesday, everyone. I'm Nicole Sandler, coming to you live at NicoleSandler.com. And of course, through the magic of digital audio, it's not even tape anymore, just digital audio on the Progressive Voices Network and a few other wonderful progressive outlets like Netroots Radio, FYI Nation, GDPR, and other wonderful internet radio stations around the globe, as they say. I have a weird predicament going on that I need to inform you of, because if I fump for a little more than usual today, you might know why. First of all, I did not sleep last night. Some of you have heard me talk about this before, but I suffer from restless leg syndrome. It is a some comedians use it as a joke. When they started coming up with medications for it, comedians thought it was hysterically funny, but it is a real thing and it keeps you up at night. I was up past 4 o'clock in the morning last night with my legs. So I'm a little out of it because of that. And then I have this other weird thing that happens from time to time, and it just started. It's called an ocular migraine. And it's not a migraine where you have a, you know, debilitating pain coming out of your head, but it affects your vision, where it starts out like a little circle and squiggly lines, and it gets bigger and bigger until it eventually goes away. And that's what's going on now. So I'm having a hard time reading. Apparently there's no danger. It just happens sometimes. It's sort of like a psychedelic thing. It's honestly very strange. It's just a weird sensation and a weird view. I was going to read something to you. That's not going to happen because the squiggly lines get in the way. Anyway, we are here. It is a Wednesday. As usual, there's a lot of news going on. The big news is that the Austin bomber is dead, and that's good. Last night I was watching TV, and sure enough, there was a news report of yet another bomb found. And it turns out that report was wrong. And it was, I guess, very early this morning that they cornered the guy. They found him. They found his car. They surrounded him, and he blew himself up, which is the best possible outcome there could have been, right? One person was slightly injured when he detonated himself. That's the best outcome for all. The guy's dead, and the people of Austin are safe once again. What a weird situation that was. 23-year-old white guy, was homeschooled, anti-abortion, anti-gay rights. You know, he sounds like he was a white supremacist. But the administration won't call it terrorism. When somebody, it's the definition of terrorism, except they save the word now for brown-skinned Muslim people. This guy was the dictionary definition of a terrorist. He terrorized the entire Austin area for the better part of the last few weeks. So, here, in fact, if I can read this. Listen, fellow straight young white males, as a member As members of an inherently violent community, it is vital that we police our own. If you see something, say something, then maybe monsters like Mark Anthony Condit will be caught before making us all look bad. Oh, wrong color? That's a guy named Aiden Wolf on Twitter. Yeah, because if he were brown, then they'd be using the word terrorism left and right. But because he was a white guy, they don't call... He was the worst kind of domestic terrorist. Well, the worst kind. I don't know that there is a worst kind. They're all pretty bad. Let me tell you briefly what happened yesterday in the special election. It wasn't a special election. It was the primary election out of Illinois. Sadly, not the outcome we wanted in Illinois' 3rd congressional district, but the challenger, the progressive Marie Newman, closed a 20-point gap to lose to the blue dog piece of crap, Dan Lipinski, that holds the seat now, by just about a point. So it was very, very close. She came really, really close. Dan Lipinski is pro-life. He's the only Democrat in Congress to vote against the Affordable Care Act. He opposes same-sex marriage. So it's really sad that this guy remains the nominee. And if you're thinking, well, this is one to stay home in, if you're in Illinois' 3rd, no, that's the guy you need to vote for, because who are the Republicans put up? A Nazi, a legitimate, real-life Nazi. Yes, a guy who... is an avowed Holocaust denier and a Nazi. So there's that. Illinois. They came close. Maybe next time is the charm. This is why I'm constantly harping on primary season. It's primary season now. Find out when your primary is. Make sure you're registered to vote. Find out who the progressive candidates are in your district, if there is one, if you're lucky enough to have one, and do everything you can to get those people elected. It would be great if we could have rid Congress of Dan Lipinski, but we're stuck with him now for another 2 years. And yes, he's better than the alternative, which is a Nazi. I don't know how else to put it. What else? Oh, do you know that we're this close to running out of money again? There's another omnibus bill on the table. The government will run out of money on Friday if no bill is passed. Trump had signaled his support for a deal that was reached, but is now reportedly having second thoughts because it doesn't have the funding for the wall that he wanted. I think there's something like $1.6 billion in this bill for the wall, and he wanted $25 billion. This is an omnibus spending bill. It's just to keep the government going. This guy just doesn't have a clue about how things work, as is evidenced by his call to Vladimir Putin yesterday. I'm still stunned that he reached out despite the implicit instructions from his advisors, do not congratulate him. Trump decided to ignore all the advice of the advisors and congratulated him, and then went on to brag about it. I don't have the clip out because I've got it in What's News. You know what? Let's do it. We'll take a break for What's News. Today on the show, we're going to speak with Dennis Campbell. If you've been listening for any amount of time, you're familiar with Dennis Campbell. He's across the pond in the UK. He's the publisher of UK Progressive Magazine and one of the co-hosts of the Three Muckrakers podcast. And he's also the author of the book, Deplorable Donald Trump, Deplorable Bully. I actually got to meet Dennis in person about a month or so ago when he was here in Florida for the Florida Healthcare Summit that I went to. And we got to hang out all day and talk. And he reached out last week when the news broke about the two, the father and daughter, former Russian spy who was poisoned with a nerve agent, on UK soil by the Russians. It's apparently there was no doubt that it was the Russians who did this. And Dennis reached out and said, you know, you want to talk about this? And I did, except I was all booked. So I booked him for today. And wouldn't you know, all kinds of news has broken dealing with both the UK and the US, most notably the Cambridge Analytica Facebook story and all the other stuff. So there's a lot to talk with Dennis Campbell about today. But first, we'll take a brief time out. Hopefully my eyes will come back to me. I've got these squiggly lines that come out of the blue. It's the weirdest thing. At least there's no pain to go along with it. Go figure. But hopefully I'll be able to read sooner rather than later. Anyway, quick time out for What's News and then back with Dennis Campbell, UK Progressive, next on the Nicole Sandler Show. We'll be right back.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Breaking news Wednesday morning, the Austin bombing suspect is dead.
Late last night and early this morning, we felt very confident that this was the suspect in the bombing incidents that took place in Austin. We had surveillance teams looking for this suspect, and we ultimately located the vehicle that this suspect was known to be driving, and witnesses told us he was driving. And in fact, we found that at a hotel right up the road here in Round Rock. We had multiple officers from both the police department and our federal partners that took up positions around the hotel awaiting the arrival of our tactical teams, because we wanted to have ballistic vehicles here so we could attempt to take this suspect into custody as safely as possible. While we were waiting for those vehicles to get here, much time had passed and the vehicle started to drive away. We began following the vehicle, again, waiting to get the tactical vehicles here so we could take this, make a stop. However, the vehicle ended up stopping in the bar ditch on the side of the road behind us. As members of the Austin Police Department SWAT team approached the vehicle, the suspect detonated a bomb inside the vehicle, knocking one of our SWAT officers back, and one of our SWAT officers fired at the suspect as well. The suspect is deceased and has significant injuries from a blast that occurred from detonating a bomb inside his vehicle.
The Washington Post is reporting that the president ignored specific warnings from his national security advisors when he congratulated Russian President Vladimir Putin Tuesday on his reelection, including a section in his briefing materials in all capital letters stating, "Do not congratulate."
The Washington Post has one of these scoops that sounds like it was made up for a satirical movie about this kind of situation at the top of American political leadership. Carol Lenig, David Nakamura, and Josh Dawsey are now reporting that when the president decided to make this call to President Putin today, he sort of went rogue, even against his own advisors. Here's the lead of their story. Again, this is almost unbelievable. Just listen to this. President Trump did not follow specific warnings from his national security advisors when he congratulated Russian President Vladimir Putin today on his reelection, including a section in his briefing materials in all capital letters stating, quote, "Do not congratulate." The president's national security advisors wrote him a note in all capital letters saying, "Do not congratulate Putin for his sham election victory. Do not legitimize that fake election. Do not say congratulations." All capital letters. And then the president gets on the phone with him and says, "Hey, congratulations." There's more. Quote, President Trump also chose not to heed talking points from aides, instructing him to condemn Putin about the recent poisoning of a former Russian spy in the United Kingdom with a powerful nerve.
Yes, Trump chose not to heed those talking points from aides, instructing him to ask Putin about the recent poisoning of a former Russian spy in the UK with a powerful nerve agent, a case that both British and US governments have blamed on Moscow.
I had a call with President Putin and congratulated him on the victory, his electoral victory. The call had to do also with the fact that we will probably get together in the not-too-distant future so that we can discuss arms, we can discuss the arms race. As you know, he made a statement that being in an arms race is not a great thing. That was right after the election, one of the first statements he made. And we are spending $700 billion this year on our military, and a lot of it is that we are going to remain stronger than any other nation in the world by far. We had a very good call, and I suspect that we'll probably be meeting in the not-too-distant future to discuss the arms race, which is getting out of control. But we will never allow anybody to have anything even close to what we have. And also to discuss Ukraine and Syria and North Korea and various other things. So I think probably we'll be seeing President Putin in the not-too-distant future.
In case you weren't counting, that was three times he said he'd be meeting with Putin in the not-too-distant future in that minute-long statement. Trump continues to tweet about the Mueller investigation Wednesday morning, but the worries over his erratic behavior have caused a few Republicans to issue warnings about a potential firing.
Senator Orrin Hatch said ousting Bob Mueller would be, quote, stupid. Speaker Paul Ryan warned the president that, quote, no one is above the law. And then there was Senator Lindsey Graham. He actually warned of impeachment.
If the president fired Robert Mueller, do you think that would be an impeachable offense?
Probably so, if he did it without cause, yeah. The stopped investigation without cause, I think, would be a constitutional crisis.
Have you told him that specifically, Senator Graham, so that he hears it from Republicans? Do not fire Bob Mueller?
I think I just did.
Okay. I got the
news. And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener-funded, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
You're listening to The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
All right, we are back. Dennis Campbell joins us. Dennis is the publisher of UK Progressive Magazine. He's co-host of the Three Muckrakers podcast and author of Donald Trump, Deplorable Bully, along with some other books as well. As I said, I was fortunate enough to finally get the chance to meet him in person when he was over here a month or so ago. Hello, Dennis.
Hey, how are you, Nicole? It was my good fortune to meet you as well. I really enjoyed hanging with you, and it was really a nice time, and the panels that we were on together were great fun.
Yes, it was. And it reminds me, you know, I don't know all the times we've spoken on the air. I don't know how much time we've spoken about healthcare and the National Health Service over there and the differences. That's what you were over here. It was the Florida Healthcare Summit that you were appearing at, that we were both appearing at. But that's certainly something that we should talk about one of these days, because here we are, you know, still dealing with there's an omnibus spending bill that has to be passed by Friday or the government runs out of money again. It's how we do things over here.
I was just looking at an article this morning about the impact that it was. I forget where it was, but the impact that a serious illness has on people, even when they get better because of lost work, and it affects their ability to go back into the job that they were in before they became ill. So, I mean, it's just having a knock-on effect.
Oh, sure. Right. And one of the things that's, that the Republicans had promised in one of the prior spending bills was a fix for Obamacare to keep it solvent, basically. And right. that's about the reaction, right, because that's how they're acting today. So that's not happening.
With this omnibus spending bill is putting in so much pork for all of the retiring committee members and committee chair people that are likely to lose their job in the election coming up in November. So they're going to make sure that their pockets are lined and they go out with a bang instead of a whimper.
Yeah, it's, you know, the whole drain the swamp thing, which, by the way, is one of the slogans that Cambridge Analytica was testing as early as 2014.
It is such a story over here. Ben, I apologize. My puppy has decided that this is the time that she wants attention. So you may hear her barking in the background.
That's okay.
She'll get over it.
I have one of those too.
You talk about draining the swamp. I mean, Cambridge Analytica, part of SCL, which is the parent company, they made Steve Bannon the vice president of the organization. And this whole program has his footprints and fingerprints all over it. I mean, this was a very naked attempt to control. And the great work of Jon Snow, he's basically the Walter Cronkite of the United Kingdom over at Channel 4. He has done an amazing job on just tracking the money, the on-camera interviews or the hidden camera interviews of the gentleman who was approaching them, trying to control things happening in the Sri Lankan election. And it was truly an astonishing moment, an astonishing thing to watch.
The whole thing, it's hard to wrap one's brain around because it sounds like a bad movie script. But basically, there's this company, Cambridge Analytica. It's a subsidiary of wasn't it a defense contractor?
Well, SCL is a very big holding, and it's massive. It has mm-hmm. holdings all over the world, and yes, they do a lot of defense. I mean, just this evening here, it is the evening here in this part of the company. They were offered politicians' hacked emails by Israeli hackers who accessed the private emails of two politicians who are now heads of state in Nigeria. So,
oh
I mean,
God.
It is just unbelievable what they are doing and what they're able to do and the power that they wield. They remind me of Blackwater back mm-hmm. in the early days of Eric Prince, when they basically became the armed forces of so many of these smaller countries. It was just incredible that they were able to wield that kind of power. And now, instead of supplying guns and goons, they're taking a bunch of bits and data, and in essence taking it because they pass themselves off as Facebook advertising. And every time you played one of those silly little games or answered a survey, they not only, up until 2015 anyways, had the ability to take all of your information, but your entire friend list on Facebook was also
right
at risk. So, it's astonishing to see how much we have been all violated by this.
It's interesting that that you bring up Eric Prince, because the Associated Press just reported that there is a connection between Cambridge Analytica and a Chinese security and logistics company run by Eric Prince.
It's a very small world. Funny that you've got Trump sitting there talking about these fears of the dark state with the FBI. And, I woke up this morning, it was very early here when they got the bomber.
Mm-hmm.
And I tweeted out fairly early this morning. I said, in 36 hours, 500 FBI and federal agents went in there and did their job and made everybody safe again. And, I said, basically stick that in your pipe and smoke it, Trump, and stop talking about the deep state. These are the real heroes. These are the people that are putting their lives on the line to try and keep us safe. And the BS that you're pulling with this deep state and everything else is just incredible.
It is. It's frightening. And there was a survey that a scary majority of Americans now believe that there is this notorious deep state operating. And it just shows the success of this Facebook Cambridge Analytica campaign, because deep state is another one of the terms they were researching along with drain the swamp.
And they were also Crooked
back
Hillary
in 2014 and Crooked
and
Hillary,
those,
right?
And,
all that.
And it was just, it was astonishing to listen to these hidden camera interviews on telly last night here, because, people began to realize, at least on this side of the pond, that election was completely stolen using this Facebook data. And the guy actually in the first episode on, I think it was Monday night, boasted that the election was decided by 40,000 people, and we knew exactly who to target, how to target, and what to do.
Wow.
And I just thought, God, that's scary.
Wow. Now they were also involved in the Brexit campaign over there, weren't they?
Yes, they were. Yes, they were. I mean, that was on a knife's edge. It was, 51.8 to 48.9 or whatever it is. I mean, it was not a huge thing, but what they did was the same thing that they did with the right wing in the United States. They sat there and they said, okay, the prime movers and shakers of Brexit were a party here called UKIP, the UK Independence right. Party. And they are a white nationalist, racist, anti-immigration party that basically took a number of very, very short messages like, for example, once we're out of Europe, £350 billion a week will come back into the NHS. Well, as soon as they'd won the referendum, within 4 hours, they were saying, no, that was a false claim. There's no way that was going to happen. And they started backtracking. And yesterday or the day before, in the polls, they were down to 1% support in the entire country, UKIP. Wow. So the PCM poll that comes out, you know, fairly, I think it's weekly or biweekly, had UKIP's share of the potential vote in the next election at 1% when they had won almost 15, 16%, and they were behind pushing the Tories into Brexit as well. So it became, you know, but you can imagine the same efforts that were made to craft all these phrases and to put these slogans together mm-hmm. that were just white hot racist statements. You know, the picture of Nigel Farage of UKIP superimposed over a long line of immigrants basically flowing out of the Syrian area and parts of Greece and that were stuck because they had nowhere else to go. And they were basically saying Britain is overrun using that particular photo. It was just totally devious and illegal. And it's been caught and called on. But I don't know that if we were to have an election, say 90, 120 days from now, they'd be able to do anything to stop these clowns.
Right. And that's the thing. They're already, you know, they're still up and running. I know that there are calls in Congress now to have Mark Zuckerberg come and testify. I honestly don't know what good it'll do. It's the old adage, you know, once the toothpaste is out of the tube, you can't put it back in. And, you know, it's amazing. I look at Facebook. I'm not on Facebook that often. I'm more a Twitter person. And my tweets go on to Facebook. And right. I wonder what, I mean, how could I be influenced on Facebook? I don't think I'm the person that they're influencing. I think,
if you look at, you know, the profile of a Trump voter, mm-hmm. you know, they're people that basically are walking around watching Fox News and listening right. to right-wing pundits. And anytime anybody tries to approach anything that looks like a fact, they stick their fingers in their ears and say, la, 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 I'm not listening, I'm not listening. Mm-hmm. And I think what's happening is that the sheer weight of the evidence of what a slime ball the president of the United States is beginning to take its toll. I mean, from the three women that are now come out
yep.
to Cambridge Analytica to the... You know, what was that tweet he sent out last week? It basically every statement in it was completely 100% false, attacking McCabe and Comey yeah. and the investigation. People are beginning to get used to it, but they're also beginning to realize we have a problem. And if it wasn't for great journalists like Carol Cadwalader over at The Guardian and, you know, the whole crew that's going after him at The Washington Post and The New York Times, none of this would come out. And, you know, when you look at what Cambridge Analytica did with this guy, Alexander Nix, who was the chair and the CEO, who is now suspended completely mm-hmm. from the company, they're beginning to realize they're in trouble. But where the hell is Zuckerberg?
That's a really good question. He's going to have to materialize soon. He's going to have to say and do something. Sheryl Sandberg as well. The two of yeah. them have been noticeably absent and very quiet on all this. And I don't know what can change. Now, they said that the data has all been destroyed. I believe that.
Yeah, I don't think it's been destroyed either, and I think there's enough of it, you know. Like you said, they're never gonna be able to reach or change your mind or my mind, but think of the minds and the hearts that they are able to change, like your Tea Party uncle, who you know isn't gonna listen to fact or anything that's out there because it's all from the deep state and it's all a conspiracy theory.
Right.
Those are the people that are out there talking to their friends that scare the living daylights out of me. I mean, how safe is the data that I have out there? That's a real question that needs to be asked. And I mean, even worse, these millennials and even my own kids, I worry about the fact that they're not thinking very carefully about what they're putting out there and how some of that can come back to haunt them later in life.
Right. Well, you know, and I use Facebook more for to promote the show, to, you know, to post the show and talk about who's coming on, and the same way I use Twitter, because as I said, my tweets go on to Facebook, and that's about the extent of my Facebook. So I have my Facebook set to public, because I use it in that sense. I don't put a lot of personal information on there, but I guess we don't realize how much personal information goes out.
Well, I mean, and you know, it's not even just what you put on there. If you, you know, visit a friend's post and you like it, mm-hmm. that all becomes part of the algorithm and part of the profile of who you are. And, you know, there it's absolutely stunning the level of detail they're able to pull from just you being on Facebook for a half an hour, if they've already got access to your data and access to your preferences.
Right.
I mean, it is really scary stuff. I mean, people say, oh, try this quiz, you'll love it. No, I don't do it, because I know that someone is going to be mining my data somehow as a result of that. And they'll even tell you, you know, we'll take a screenshot of your of all your friends and all your posts and there's a lot of powerful information in there that everybody's going to know. I'm a progressive and I'm going to follow Democratic or progressive politics, and you know, there's still things that can be taken out of there, I'm sure, that somebody could try to use against you. I mean, I know a lot of people that look at a web page, and you have these Google adverts that come up, and you know, you hear these stories of people saying, you know, we were having a discussion in front of Alexa when we were talking about, you know, a particular brand of car, and all of a sudden every advert I saw was about that particular brand of
car.
Now
that's creepy.
It is creepy. It's freaky. And I mean, these guys, back in 2001, I was living in the Netherlands, and we were trying to put together a portal for the Dutch Boekenbon, the Netherlands publishing group. And we did, and we got it up and running, and it was obviously very slow, because our speeds were very slow back then. But one of the business partners in this thing said, you know, what's really important is the data that we're going to be able to mine out of the people who are there on the portal, will be able to turn around and sell that data. And the three of us looked at him like he had just fallen off of the planet Zoron. And what the hell are you talking about, data that's going to be mine? I apologize, Richard. You were absolutely right. And it has gone, the pendulum has swung from what a ridiculous idea that is to now they know everything about you by the footprints you leave out there on the web.
It's frightening. Dennis Campbell is with us again from across the pond. He is the publisher of UK Progressive magazine. You can find him on Twitter at UK Progressive. There's other stories that have involved both of our countries. In fact, when you first reached out, there was the story about the attempted assassination of Sergei Skripal, I believe is his name, and his daughter, through some very rare nerve agent, like a nerve gas they traced.
The 1970s.
It was, I didn't realize it had been around that long. This is really frightening stuff. And apparently it only exists in Russia. That's how they know that it was a Russian nerve agent. And this assassination attempt was on UK soil. Obviously it was a big story over here. It's got to be huge over there. What's happening with this?
Well, yeah, the village of Salisbury, and the only reason anybody ever goes to Salisbury is to see the famous cathedral there, because there's really not much else there. But, you know, imagine you're sitting there and you see this couple in obvious distress, as the police officer did, and he and the three of them are still in comas, and it is Sadly, there is no antidote for this nerve gas, and they're literally just being kept alive by machines, all three of them. They were the worst because they were in the most direct contact of it, as well as another 17, 18 people inside the restaurant. I mean, it was the table that they sat at was so contaminated, it had to be destroyed. So just to give you an idea of how serious and how much was involved. Now, they can't decide how it got there. They think it might have been in a gift that this woman brought back in a suitcase, but they're still not 100% sure of how it was introduced. Russia, of course, denies everything. Putin, of course, denies everything. And, but he's president for life now, having gotten 74% of the vote. And it was, we literally today had our Donald Trump, a man by the name of Boris Johnson, who is our foreign secretary. So he's the equivalent or was the equivalent of Rex Tillerson, saying that this year's Football World Cup, which, by the way, is going to be held in all across Russia, he compared it to Hitler's 1936 Olympics.
Oh, my.
Yeah, now, our football and that soccer fans are legend, yes, but for all the wrong reasons. But they're going to be going in droves to support this English team, and they tend to get very rowdy, and they could be literally thrown in jail for life, some of these rowdies. And, we would have a situation where Russia just expelled the liaison diplomat and closed down the British consulate in the tit for tat. We sent 23 home. They sent 23 home and went a step further. And, Russia's now saying that the UK is hiding evidence of the crime, and that this was probably manufactured by the military forces there. It's just stunning. Just the bold-faced level of out-and-out lying that is being done by Putin and his minions.
Right, and we've got Trump, who refuses to call him out on it. Now, there's some question about the timing on Rex Tillerson's firing, because Rex Tillerson, Trump wouldn't say it. Sarah Huckabee Sanders wouldn't come out and say it. Rex Tillerson did blame the poisoning with this nerve agent on Russia and Putin, and the next day he was fired. You think there's anything connecting the two?
Of course. I mean, you have to have blind fealty to Donald Trump, blind loyalty, or that's it, you're done. And I mean, if you look at what he did and how he handled just this past weekend, the firing of McCabe, and that it was just a mean, vicious thing that one would do to somebody 24 hours before they're scheduled to retire with full benefits. And it was just one of those moments where you look at it and you think, that's just not right on so many levels, yet that's what he's been able to do and what he's been able to get away with. I mean, we've got a real issue with Russia, whether it's, whether or not you believe these hypersonic missiles are going to be, something we're going to see in the next decade, or whether you believe that China is going to do the same thing, or whether you believe the U.S. is going to do the same thing. It is changing the face of warfare, but it's also changing the entire relationship with Russia. I mean, there's a Labour MP, John Woodcock, who's saying that MPs should be pushing for the tournament to be postponed or moved elsewhere, and some are even saying England should not go. That's a reminder of 1980, when the U.S. was, boycotted the Russian Olympics, and in 1984, in a tit for tat, Russia didn't come to Los Angeles. So, it is, or the Soviet Union back then, excuse me, didn't come to Los Angeles. So you're ratcheting up this fight that's going on between the two nations, and there's no way it ends well. I mean, it was nice to see that Theresa May stood up and actually behaved prime ministerial, that she actually was able to, get somewhere with her backbenchers who've been giving her nothing but trouble and move forward and do some things. But it is really stunning to see when we have, all of this, and yet we're still nowhere closer to any sort of a resolution, because Russia just doesn't give a damn. They're going to do whatever they want, whenever they want. Putin knows it. Trump knows it. And it's like, well, there's no consequence, so we're just going to be ruled by a pair of despots. It makes no sense.
Right. Well, we keep hearing over here how, you know, obviously the UK is our oldest and best ally overseas, and yet we're not standing up for them. We're not, you know, you have Trump calling to congratulate Vladimir Putin on this election, this selection, this sham of an election that they held the other day, even though he was warned by his advisors, do not congratulate him. He still did. Is there as much dismay among the electorate over there is here? People going, scratching their heads, going, what the hell is this guy doing?
Well, I think finally the Brits have realized that nothing is going to change with him, that he's just going to continue to be who he is. I think it hasn't fully hit there. I mean, we're beginning to realize that even when Trump and Theresa May sit down, meet and come to agreement, that it's not an agreement, that Donald Trump has been known to agree to things. I mean, he'll do anything in front of the television cameras for the benefit of the cameras. Go back 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago when we had the Parkland shooting. That's actually a month now. Yeah. The Parkland shooting. We were there in Florida together when that happened. And, you know, where are they today? But they sat in the White House in a huge circle. It was a huge press moment for Trump. He said all kinds of things, promised the world, and then 24 hours later, he started backtracking. Yep. The next day, he had lunch with the NRA, and all of a sudden, all of the promises that were made to get legislation going disappeared. The only people that grew a spine were the Florida legislature.
And it's a small spine. I mean, what they passed, you know, is again, it's a baby step, and baby steps are okay because you need to walk before you can run. There is one a provision in the law that the Florida legislature passed that actually is already taking effect, that where a family member can alert law enforcement to somebody who has a gun who shouldn't have one, and they can take the gun from that person, maybe only for a week, but at least it's a beginning. But really, it is a tiny baby step that they did. Well, and the things that Trump signaled are nowhere in sight. Nothing.
Well, and this coming Saturday is going to be unbelievable. I mean, if you thought the Women's March was big the day after his inauguration, I think this one is going to set all kinds of records permanently and forever. And I truly hope that all those that are planning marches down there in Miami and Fort Lauderdale, all of you move up to West Palm Beach, because he's going to be there all weekend hiding from this. And you should make as much noise from as many points that he's likely to pass while he's there as you can. So there's no way he can avoid this. He's bailing out of town, because I've already seen the weekly guidance on the press for the White House. He's going to be there all weekend long, won't be anywhere near where all the noise and the craziness is going to be in Washington. So you people have the perfect opportunity there in the state of Florida to send him a message that he cannot miss. And I think that that's absolutely critical.
Florida is usually pretty, what's the word I'm looking for? I've lost the word. Apathetic, maybe, is the word.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I guess it's the heat. Although this weekend, I think it's supposed to cool down a little bit, so there's no excuse. But I've been to marches in West Palm Beach along the waterway that goes. It abuts Southern Boulevard, where he's got to cross over to get from West Palm Beach to Palm Beach, where Mar-a-Lago is. I don't know what's planned there, but I know that there are marches planned everywhere. And I live in the town of Coral Springs, which is right next door to Parkland. And usually there's nothing out west. We're west of Fort Lauderdale. There's nothing out in this area. And there are marches planned in both Parkland and Coral Springs, numerous ones at that. So I'm sure there's something going on in West Palm Beach as well. But the thing is, he'll see it. I mean, it'll be all over TV, although maybe not on Fox, which is, you know, his TV drug of choice.
Aren't these kids great, though?
They're pretty amazing. I don't know if you saw 60 Minutes the other night.
I saw the clip on YouTube. I mean, she's stunning. Absolutely stunning, that girl.
Yeah, and Emma Gonzalez.
I'm so proud of her because it just is, you know, they're actually doing what we talked about as kids, you know, being part of student governments. It was all for show, but they're actually out there bringing about real change. And it just warms my heart to see them.
Well, it's a matter of life and death, and they get that. And how sickening was it? It wasn't yesterday. It was 2 days ago that there was another school shooting.
Yeah. By the way, USA Today just released Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg just said his first comments to date since the data scandal. I'm serious about doing what it takes to protect our community. That was a direct quote from Zuckerberg on USA Today just a moment ago.
Okay. I wonder what the hell that means.
Well, you know, my community could be my business, you know.
Right. You got that right. Could very well be. Dennis Campbell's with us. You know, the book, the last time you were on, we talked about your book, Donald Trump, Deplorable Bully.
I have a new one, you know.
I know you do. That's what I was just going to ask about it. So, Breathing Hope and Fear, Egypt Since 2011, obviously dealing with Egypt. Tell us about this book.
Well, it was really more of a labor of love because in 2011, you know, we were all in this state of exhausted ecstasy after Egypt's Mubarak was toppled by this group of plucky young kids. Well, they weren't kids anymore. They were mostly in their 20s and 30s. And, you know, I tried to go back and look 7 years on. Most of them don't exist anymore. They've either been imprisoned or killed. And it's absolutely impossible for it was almost impossible for me to reach anybody that was involved in the motion. It's in the movement itself. And what it did was it exposed to me, and this was something that bothered me at the time as I watched the 6 months to a year after, that the skills that you have to use to bring about a revolution are very different from the skills you need to then build a govern and do it in a way that's going to change the entire system. And what we saw happen very, very quickly was and I compare this in the book, and I compare it every time I talk, to Occupy Wall Street. They had a tremendous message and a tremendous series of demands, but like both of these, they were leaderless movements, and this is where I think I'm going to start to get some hate mail, but the leaderless movement part was what I think ended up killing them, because they had nobody that could stand up inside the existing system to change it. And that's pretty much what I wrote about in this book, was that because of the vacuum that was created by them not being there, it allowed the Muslim Brotherhood and Morsi to come in and take over. And by the time they got to the election, everybody was so disillusioned. He won, you know, basically with 26% of the vote because so many people stayed home. And suddenly began to take the country over the course of the next year towards a theocracy. And the military said, wait a minute, we didn't sign up for this. And they flexed their muscles and they came back. And now we're stuck with El-Sisi, who is going to go through an election like what Putin went through and what Erdogan went through and others, a coronation that says basically, you know, this is our promised father, and he's going to take care of everything and everybody, and we won't have to worry anymore. And that is an extraordinarily difficult environment to work in and to bring about any real change. Because after Egypt, nobody else fell. All, you know, you bring out the dictator's playbook, they ripped it up and wrote a new chapter, said basically kick the crap out of anybody that tries to uprise and think that they're going to do what happened in Tunisia and then in Egypt, it isn't going to happen. The only person that negotiated was the King of Jordan, and they ended up with a bit of power sharing in a situation where everybody got a little bit of something. But in Bahrain and across the Middle East, these strongmen just beat the crap out of anybody that thought that they were going to pull anything that looked like an Egypt. So it really, and I use the breathing hope and fear, is it comes from Gilbert and Sullivan's Trial by Jury, which is a bit strange, but I love W.S. Gilbert, because in the same breath, you can have hope, but you can also have fear. And that's why I chose that as the title for it.
You talk about the strongmen, and this is something that Trump aspires to. That's what's so frightening is, the way his reverence towards Putin. He'll never say a bad word about Putin. He'll badmouth everybody else and their brother, but he's never called Putin a name. He calls Kim Jong-un a little rocket man, or fat little rocket man, but never a bad word for Putin, for Duterte, for Erdogan. I mean, you look at the people, the world leaders who he admires, and they're all these autocrats, all these despots. It's really kind of frightening.
He called Xi Jinping. And congratulated him on basically becoming president for life.
And then joked about maybe I should try that. It scares the daylights out of me, wondering what's going to happen in the next election when he, knock on wood laminate, loses. And what if he won't go?
Well, he won't have much of a choice. He has to go on the 20th of January. And, if necessary, the military will remove him because they don't like him. Nobody likes him. So, I mean, let's be 100% clear, he will be gone. The question I'm more worried about is if he decides a state of emergency exists and suspends the election.
Right.
That was what would be more interesting to watch.
Yeah, it is frightening. The scope of the things that he could possibly do, and he knows no limits. I mean, the fact that he went against the advice of his advisors and congratulated Putin, I'm still reeling over that. Who does that?
And it is just, I mean, there's just this serial arrogance to the man. I mean, and he just doesn't care. I mean, what advisors think. I mean, what was he most upset about yesterday? The fact that somebody on his staff leaked out that he had briefing notes that said "Don't congratulate him" in all caps.
Well, and John Kelly is pissed off about that. Apparently, from the reporting that I heard last night, it's not that somebody leaked it out; it's that people were so mortified that he did this that word spread like wildfire that it was everywhere. Everybody knew it wasn't an instance of somebody picking up a phone and surreptitiously calling a reporter and saying, "You're not going to believe what he did now," but it was just everywhere, and people were just mortified.
Yeah, well, it's because it's so in character, but they still couldn't believe that he would have those notes from his advisors and he would completely ignore them.
Yes. And then brag about it. He gets in the room with the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, hello, and says, "I called and congratulated Vladimir Putin on his electoral victory." Are you kidding me?
Jeez. And what the hell's the Saudi Arabian prince doing there?
Good question.
With everything going on in his country right now.
Yes.
The regime he's running is a strong man and, won't even let his mother, see his father or something crazy like that. I mean, it all begins to beggar belief, but this is the dictator's playbook, and he wants desperately to be in the same country, mentioned in the same phrase as these guys. And it just continues to go crazy, and you just wonder where it's going to end.
Question from the chat room for you, Dennis Campbell.
Yes.
Trumantown says, ask about Jeremy Corbyn. Who will destroy the Tories? How is Jeremy Corbyn doing these days?
Jeremy kind of stepped in it last week. When he... how when you have an international incident, the way it's supposed to work is that partisanship leaves and stays at the border, and yeah, everybody falls in line and supports the country. I mean, we saw this with the Iraq War, how, you know, for the most part, whether you agree or disagree. And as much as I dislike Prime Minister May, she did an outstanding job of standing up and being prime ministerial and saying what needed to be said. And Jeremy kind of stepped in it by, you know, suggesting that that maybe there were other things, that maybe some of what the Russians were saying had some weight. And it's like,
oh, really?
Boy, that all of a sudden became, you know, Red Jeremy again, the Russian lover. And he's not really against Brexit. And so he lost quite a bit of steam as a result of it. Instead of saying complimentary things, which, for example, when Blair was prime minister and Cameron was on the opposite side, about Iraq, and, you know, when we were losing people and that everybody gathered around and rallied around, it was not the moment or the time to do that. And so he's suffered a little bit. That said, the Tories are still in a world of hurt. They're barely ahead in the latest PCM poll. But if an election were held tomorrow, I think a number of the marginal seats would swing the other way back to Labour. But I'm not 100% sure that's going to solve the problem. The biggest issue is the party I used to be associated with, the Liberal Democrats, cannot get out of their own way. They should be a strong alternative on Brexit, a strong progressive voice. And, you know, they made a new head of the party in Vince Cable, who's a fairly well-known person, but they cannot shake the guilt from going into government with the Tories, and they cannot shake the need to always be the smartest person in the room. So they can't win hearts. They win minds, but they don't win hearts. But as we know from watching our Fox people on Tea Party, it has nothing to do with the mind. It has everything to do with how a person feels.
Right. Well, you know, we have this same problem over here with the Democrats. We've got the Democrats who just won't get out of their own way and, in fact, sabotage the more progressive factions. We're in primary season now for the midterms. And we have the DCCC actively going against progressive primary candidates, which, you know, is not what the party should be doing.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm of a mind that this is going to be a huge wave election for the Democrats, regardless. I mean, I think even Ted Cruz could lose his seat. That's the way I feel about it.
I hope so. Beto O'Rourke is a great candidate. He's
a good candidate.
Yeah.
And I look at people, Connor Lamb, who just won the Pennsylvania 18th, which will now be the Pennsylvania 14th. And I look at the gentleman that won in Alabama, the Senate seat, and I think
Doug Jones.
But you know, what are they? They're centrist, moderate Democrats, and I think what has to happen is you got to get into power before you can start worrying about how you're going to move forward. The DCCC is always going to go for the establishment candidate, rightly or wrongly. I mean, it was great to see how close that candidate came in that district in Illinois. And at the end of the day, this goes back to the Bernie versus Hillary. And the initial problem with that whole thing is that Bernie was never a Democrat. And what is the role of the party? It's to preserve the party. So when you look at what what's her name from who ran the DNC and others did.
Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Yeah, Debbie Wasserman. They did their job. Now, I don't happen to agree with a lot of what they did, but I understand what they did because I worked for Chuck Manette and he ran the DNC in 81 to 85. And you're told always that, you know, you've got to do your best to make sure the party doesn't do what the Republicans have done, which is totally splinter apart into about four or five factions. And, you know, so it's not going to be pretty.
Nope.
But I still think we're got a chance for that wave.
I hope so. That's what Howie Klein believes that, too. And I trust Howie's intuition. Dennis Campbell, the new book is Breathing Hope and Fear, Egypt Since 2011. Find him at ukprogressive.co.uk. That's for the magazine, and UK Progressive on Twitter. Dennis, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Same here. It was so great to meet you.
And you as well. Really great to have you in our state of Florida. Thanks for visiting.
Thank you.
We'll talk again soon. Thank you so much. Bye-bye. And with that, we are done for the day. Tomorrow, Howie Klein is back. We'll see you then.